I'm in a car code. It's 88.5 KCSN, and we're doing something a little bit different this morning. Jean-Michel Jarre joins us to talk about his legacy and, more importantly, a fantastic new album of collaborations. First of all, thank you for talking to us. It's so nice to meet you.
It's my pleasure to be with you today.
I want to talk about this record and some of the people that you worked with on it, but to set the table perhaps for some people in our audience who are not too sure about Jean-Michel, but maybe know some of the music. Some background. I know that you started playing at a very early age. Was piano your first instrument?
Yeah, I started with the piano, and then I moved to the guitar, and I studied classical music, but I was at the same time in a rock band until I discovered electroacoustic music and electronic music, and I dived into it until today.
When you first discovered electronic music, what was that moment?
It was really when I was a teenager, around 16 years old, and I suddenly, by coincidence, went into this group of freaks, basically. Headed by a man who became a mentor, and I consider today as probably one of the grandfather of electronic music, Pierre Schaeffer, with Stockhausen in Germany, are probably the two major figures of electroacoustic and electronic music, with the idea that for the first time somebody was considering approaching music not only in terms of notes and chords, but in terms of sounds. And that changed the history of music since. So, if you're considering DJs today, they're all sound designers without even knowing it. And this idea of the fact that music is made of sounds and not only notes and chords changed the way we are today writing music, producing music, and even distributing music through electronic means.
What was it, though, about electronic music that attracted you? Was it the experimentation?
Actually, what attracted me to electronic music was probably this kind of organic approach to sound. I was really involved in those days in abstract painting, the kind of Jackson Pollock type of paintings, and the fact that you are really dealing with textures and paintings in a very organic way, almost sensual way, sexual way. And it's the same thing with electronic music, where you have to deal with frequencies and textures to create soundscapes and to create, strange sounds and in a very organic way again. And actually this album I'm involved with, and I thought about, that is probably what gave me the idea and the desire to work with some people over the four decades of electronic music, having this kind of organic approach to sound.
When you first started, there weren't many people doing this. You were one of the early guys actually composing and making records. You have some contemporaries, of course, people like Tangerine Dream and Khan. But Oxygen, which was your first mainstream success, really changed the way the mainstream looked at electronic music. When you look back at that time now, were you aware of how groundbreaking that album was?
When I did Oxygen, it was with this idea of creating a bridge, really, between experimental music and pop music. And I had no idea about the kind of success this piece of music could have. Actually, it has been rejected by most of record companies on those days, saying, what's that? There is no drums, no singers. Tracks are lasting for 10 minutes, and on top of it is French. So
it's kind of a badge of honor, though, to be rejected so many times and then be proven right.
Yeah, that's right. It's quite reassuring afterwards.
Yes.
But you know, it's the privilege of this at the same time is actually because just chronologically I've been one of the first pioneering this genre. The idea of opening doors on virgin territories is something which is a great privilege because you have nothing behind you The weight of the past is not that heavy that, for instance, which it could be today with some beginners who are, I would say, are beginning already old by having 40 years or 50 years of pretty heavy stuff. So there is this mixture of desire and innocence, I think, in that you can listen, you can have in Oxygen. That is very, very symptomatic of the early days of any kind of movement. It is true in new movements, in when rock started, when electronic music started, when abstract painting started. This kind of purity, in a sense, and also innocence, which is something that you are always trying to get back in time. I mean, back all along your life. But that first album or first for success is something always special for any artist.
I want to talk about other parts of your career as well, and especially the live events that you've become very well known for. But let's dip into this new album. And let's start, if you don't mind, by playing the collaboration with Air, who are a band that I've got a lot of history with and met them many times and actually did a session with them in Paris quite some time ago now. Tell me how that came about. They're French, obviously, and there are a few French collaborations. How did the collaboration with Air come about?
Actually, obviously, when I started to think about this idea of collaborating with people relevant in the music, electronic music scene, Air was quite high in the top of the list. We always used to say together that there is some oxygen in Air. And we have in common probably this kind of impressionist approach to music, where, for instance, the German electronic music is more robotic or more cold, if you think about Kraftwerk, if you think about Tangerine Dream back in days when they were leaving the stage, just leaving the sequences, playing and just leaving the stage to make
watching.
A kind of make a statement that like a pre-Terminator type of concept, and we have in common this kind of more Ravel, Debussy in electronic music,
the classical
and also
sensual approach.
And yes, exactly, and probably an impressionist also approach to sounds. I remember when I started with electronic music, that was actually the reverse of Kraftwerk. Kraftwerk or Tangerine Dream had this kind of very cold and robotic approach of sounds, and I was almost like a dogma, thinking that which is great in electronic music is actually having this kind of hypnotic sequences or patterns, but every note should be different, exactly like a heartbeat. Heartbeat is always the same, but never the same, because if we know that if each heartbeat was identical, we would die. And it's had the same idea, and I found that in the music of Air, this mixture of layers and also, I mean, having this kind of track which could be almost played live, and the story behind this track is quite special, because when I approached Air, they told me, it would be great, but we need then to find something that would be more, the result of it should be more than a track of Air and more than a track of yourself. And then we got this idea by why not using and exploring all the different generations of electronic instruments from the 40s to 2015, and that this track should be a journey through electronic instruments. So actually, the track is starting with using instruments of the late 40s that I was using when I was students at the Music Research Center or with Stockhausen in Germany, with this old bank of oscillators, and also doing the first beat is done like this on the track, with a tape, a pair of scissors, and some sellotape, with the very simple, and our listeners will immediately understand what I'm going to say. Actually, on a tape machine, it goes to a certain speed, let's say 15 IPS per second. If you go to 120 BPM, a bar of four beats would be 2 seconds. So a bar would be 2 seconds, so it means that a bar at 120 BPM would be 30 IPS, and then by dividing eighth notes and fourth notes, you will have a certain distance of in the tape, and by editing this as a loop, you had your first beat and your first pattern. See, the loop was being played on the play head of the tape recorder, and on the other side you had a mic stand like this to get the loop being played endlessly on the front of the tape machine.
And you use tape.
I use tape for the beginning of this of the track, and then I merged it in one of the first drum machines I used with Oxygen, and then moving to the first modular Moog synthesizer. Then moving to the first samplers, such as the Fairlight, which was a legendary instrument from the 80s. Then moving to the hardware, digital, polyphonic synthesizer, such as the DX7. And actually the last sound of this track is made with an iPad.
That's quite amazing.
And actually, we don't care. But that was actually for us a kind of
a project for
ourselves. Yes. Also to break our habits. What I've learned through this process and through this very interesting project is actually to confront our habits, our rituals, our weaknesses. We all have habits. I mean, the sound engineer here has a certain way to put the microphones. You have a certain way to move, and the body language is very important. Uh-huh. And in the creative process, the body language says it all. So that was also very interesting to confront with Air. I mean, being the third member of that band.
And to break down
that's right.
The traditional process
exactly.
of making music.
That's right, exactly.
What is the song called?
The song is called Close Your Eyes, and it's coming from the vocoder part that we added and they added on the track, because I wanted to collaborate. You know, it has been true for every collaborator. I had an idea and a fantasy of the collaborator. I have a fantasy of Air, and this fantasy is probably linked to the sound of the bass, very 60s sound of the bass that Nicolas from one of the member of Air has, and also the vocoder sound, very typical of Moon Safari, the first album. And I really wanted to get this color of Air, and they've been really nice to accept that. I mean, and then the mixture of it, I think, is very truly quite fairly balanced between their DNA and mine.
We're talking with Jean-Michel Jarre, and this is the collaboration from the new album with the band Air, JB and Nicolas. And it's called Close Your Eyes at KCSN. Switch me on. Play my sound. And close your eyes. Switch me on. And stay around. It's 88.5 KCSN. Nick Harkel, your host. Jean-Michel Jarre is our guest, and we're touring a couple of the songs on his fabulous new project that celebrates really the legacy of electronic music. 16 collaborations with all sorts of wonderful people from the genre, I guess, although there's many genres in electronic music these days. I want to ask you before we go forward, as somebody who has worked in this medium for so long, and has seen so many changes come about because of technology, the availability of technology to make things quicker, to make things faster, and a whole new generation of electronic artists that have arrived just in the last 5 years. When you look at how EDM exploded in the last couple of years, suddenly we had to give it a name, electronic dance music, the industry needed a name for it. When you saw this starting to explode with DJs, what were your thoughts on that initially when you saw people like Skrillex and Deadmau5 and people like this? People who can go out and play to 100,000 people every night. Now, I know you've done some pretty big gigs as well, but that's really not the norm for electronic artists or DJ artists until recently. Your thoughts on that?
lots of questions.
I'm sorry, but
I'm going to try to because it's a very very interesting question indeed. I mean, actually, I've always been convinced that electronic music was far beyond a genre, and it was like it's not like hip hop or rock or punk, but it's a new it was and it is a new way of approaching composition and production of music, and even distribution. And having this kind of idea where the sound is the most important thing, and the sound also that we can share in public spaces. When I started to do these massive concerts, I was really involved in opera as an art form. I thought that why people such as Wagner or even Pete Townsend was suddenly, I mean, being brilliant musicians. And the opera back in days, like Wagner and Vivaldi, Verdi and Puccini and all that. I mean, they suddenly wanted to work with visual artists, I mean, carpenters and painters and scenographs to create something else. And I said, you know, with electronic music, it's not that sexy to be 2 hours behind your laptop. And then you need the kind of visual correspondences to what you're doing, especially in days where you can hear music everywhere, in your car, in your street with your headphones. And if you go to a festival, to a concert, it's because you have a visual expectation to the artist you like. And obviously, when you are playing live outside, obviously the scale of the audience is different. It's the reason why that I did concert with 1 million people, even 2 million people. And in a sense, it's probably part of the DNA of electronic music. Now, when you're talking about EDM, I mean, I know that the music industry loves labels. And before EDM, you had New Age. And Brian Eno, for instance, went from New Age from rock to New Age. And if he's doing a remix, he would be probably in the EDM label, under the EDM. So that doesn't mean anything, except the fact that it's suddenly pointing a phenomenon, and this phenomenon is not the D is not that important. The EM are far more important. The electronic music EDM is one sector of the electronic music scene, and it's very funny you mentioned two of the artists I respect the most in the EDM: Skrillex and Deadmau5. Those artists, I mean, are existing also because of technology. Technology dictating styles, not the reverse. It's because of the fact that you could cut only 3 minutes on a 78 in the 50s that Elvis Presley songs were lasting 3 minutes, and the single as a format, I mean, existed. Now, it's because you have a plugin called Massive. And this plugin is the virtual synthesizer as a plugin, and this plugin gave birth to the dubstep. Only this, and it shows that technology dictates styles and not the reverse. So actually, the music we is the reason why that generation after generation, I mean, technology brings new approaches of sounds, and it's what's exciting today. Is actually, I think that. And this is a little bit what my project is contributing to show. Is actually, I mean, the beauty of our times is actually you can merge the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and 2015, because all the technological tools we can use are available.
Availability is really what it's all about. If you think about the history of rock music, and as you mentioned, the early 78s were limited to 3 minutes because that's all you could do. Now we have unlimited recording capacity and unlimited access to 60 years plus of rock music, which if you're a modern artist, you can do anything you want with that. You can cut it up, you can change it, you can pitch shift, all sorts of things. And obviously those guys have created their own genre from all these pre-existing genres, but it all fits into electronic music. Let's talk about another song that's on the album. I want to talk about your collaboration with Moby, who I feel was a pioneering electronic artist before he had a career as a rock musician.
Punk even.
Yeah, he came from going to Black Flag concerts.
Yeah, that's right.
And then obviously became a DJ before DJs were huge, and had a record deal, lost a record deal, and then came back with something where he took history with his album Play.
Absolutely.
And went back through field recordings and archive recordings and created something new. How did you come to collaborate with Moby?
First of all, I could have made your comments could be mine, because I'm a massive fan of Moby for all the reasons you just brilliantly explained.
Thank you.
Because Moby is, I used to call him the Woody Allen of techno. I mean, he's kind of depressive, Romanesque, dynamic, joyful type of all kind of adjectives could work for Moby, and he was also on top of my list of collaborations. I'm so glad that we've done this song called "Sons Have Gone" in this project. I mean, he has. It was very interesting, because when we started to work together, he was really in. He was the first one really to be in the project, and I shared with him a demo. He immediately really liked and enjoyed.
Did you start work over the internet by exchanging files, or did
no.
you meet?
I mean, that's very interesting. I mean, you know, this project is at a distance of a galaxy from a featuring album, where you are just sending in space kind of file, and somebody will take it and will put some top line on it, and you never meet, you don't know, and you receive something, you have no idea about what it is. It's exactly the reverse. This has been for me kind of initiation project, you know, one of the dogma I had for this project, for every collaborator, was to travel, to go physically, not through managers, not through lawyers or whatever, but just to having an artistic contact. When I went to see Tangerine Dream, I took the train from Paris to Vienna, then I took a car from Vienna 200 miles from in a little village where Tangerine Dream was living. The same with Vince Clark in Brooklyn, the same with Moby, not in New York, but in Los Angeles, where he's living now. It was all that was very important. So the first thing we did with Moby was to meet, and he was actually in Paris. And when I first talked about the project with him, we shared the music, and then I worked on it. I sent him a demo, and then I joined him on in Los Angeles in his studio, and I worked here quite a lot in Los Angeles for this project actually, and I was thinking that he loved the track, but I don't know what. There is something that he was not at ease with. He didn't tell me. And then after a while, he confessed, you know, I'm a bit lost with the time signature, because what I've done actually, this project was, I mean, lots of dance music or electronic music are on with the time signature of 4/4, right? And then I had this idea of doing something quite hypnotic and quite haunting with Moby. And I used a kind of 6/4 signature, which is more something you would have in jazz or classical music, but not that much in electronic music. And then he was not too much at ease with this. And then we went into the studio and say, okay, you know what? 6/4, you can do 2/4. Three times 2/4, well, that makes 6/4, and then it makes our life easy. This is a bit technical for our listeners, but except for musicians who immediately understand what I'm saying.
It's
but anyway,
the science of electronic music.
Yeah,
right
but
now.
But you know, which is interesting, is actually we went into the studio, and then he started with just a simple D minor with three notes. A 5 years child can do that. It was Moby. Said, my God, no, but everybody can. You could do it. Everybody can do it. But it's Moby, and this is what makes style. Actually, you can play. Everybody can play the same chord, but I mean, Moby has that kind of ability. He has an instant recognizable sound, and I learned a lot by working with him. You should ask him if he learned anything from me. But I think it has been a very interesting collaboration. He's very talkative about it. He talks a lot about our collaboration. It has been really also something I had in mind also to I wanted to hear his voice also in a certain way. And so I processed his vocals in a certain way. And I remember that the first time he listened to the reason, he said, "Wow, I love my voice. I sound a little bit like David Bowie."
Well, that must have made him very happy. The thing about Moby, and I've met and spoken to him many times. Yeah, sure. He is first and foremost a fan. He's a fan of music. So people like Bowie, and you know his other references as well, Joy Division and New Order. He's very romantic in his own way.
Absolutely, yeah.
And clearly he brought that to this song. So let's listen to the track with Jean-Michel Jarre and Moby. It's called Suns Have Gone, and it's 88.5 KCSN. In a place of I'm Nick Harcourt, it's 88.5 KCSN. We're here. Actually, we should point out that the background noise, which I'm sure you can hear, is from Sunset Boulevard, because we're at the Chateau Marmont, half French of you.
Yes, I was saying that I'm very grateful that our sound engineer here is not being difficult with the sounds around, because I think to tell you the truth, I love interviews with surround sounds. I mean, sure. The sounds around. Because well, that'd be great life. I mean, people are obsessed by silence. But life is not made of silence. It's made of noise. And especially talking about electronic music, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great to have this kind of police cars driving while we are talking and
dogs
cars
barking
and all that. And instead of our sound engineer here freaking out, he's just smiling and laughing. And I love that. So I'm really enjoying this interview very much.
Well,
and
good.
Also on top of it, it's at the Chateau Marmont, which has also its own history in terms of music. I think one of the first time I went to this town, I mean, I went to here, and I love this kind of futuristic, retro-futuristic feel that this building has.
Los Angeles, it's got its own thing, hasn't it? It feels like it could disappear at any second.
Exactly, absolutely.
I've been here before and had lunches and all that crap down by the pool or whatever. I've never actually been in a room before, and I thought when I walked in, I was like, I wonder what debauchery has gone on in this room, because you know there's been like tons of it. You know, we need one of those black lights and we could see all the
absolutely.
Before we get to talk about our last song, which is another collaboration with a French artist, M83, I want to talk about the live thing, because you mentioned that you have played to huge crowds, 1.5 million, 2 million people, the middle of Paris, Place de la Concorde, the Eiffel Tower, in China. How important is the spectacle for you? And when you were thinking of this collaboration, the question is, do you see taking this on the road? Do you see performances with this music?
So first of all, for me, the performance is an integral main part of music, because music is about sharing, right? And we were talking about Moby actually the other day that, you know, being a musician is dealing, in a sense, with nothing. What we mean by that is actually doing music is actually just moving the air in a certain way to create, to make you cry, to make you laugh, to give you the idea of having sex or dancing or bumping all over the place. It's just by moving hair in a certain way. And this is quite magical. This is the most magical mode of expression. And there is something where when you are probably outside, which is absolutely special, because you don't have the walls, you don't depend on reverberation. When you have the sky as the ceiling, I mean, the relationship you have with the audience is totally different. I mean, one of the success, and we don't talk about this that much, but one of the reasons of the success of festivals these days is because it's outdoor. I think that it's even if you have tents and things, but it's an outdoor event where people are sharing something. Probably in days where you are isolated, I mean, you just deal with your screen and your laptop. I mean, suddenly you are shoulder against shoulder. Getting and sharing the same experience. So that always has to me. It was always me for me very important. And this kind of also circus feel. I love with concerts and especially with the kind of concerts I've done a lot. I did a lot of tours as well, but kind of one-offs. They're when you have no second chance on the next Saturday, no second chance for the audience, no second chance for yourself. It's like it was very premonitory of a rave party or a festival, because a festival, okay, it's every year, but it's not like a tour. It's something that unique moment then we share with your friends. So that's always been very important, and actually that is also linked with the philosophy of electronic music. Also DJs are following this path.
I think perhaps this is one of the reasons that EDM in the United States has taken off, because it is the opportunity for a generation to go out and feel that tribal gathering that perhaps we don't have anymore in many ways, because the generation of people under 30, for example, people in their 20s, are so they're on the computers all the time. Everybody's on social media all the time. People don't get together. So when they get the opportunity to be with 100,000 people, it's something really special.
It's exactly that. I totally agree.
So do you think, do you have plans to take this music to a live setting?
Absolutely. And I'm really interested also by limitations. I think, obviously, as it's when I'm hearing what I'm saying, I'm just saying a cliche on your mic, because obviously limitations are what makes art an art form. It's because you have, I mean, the danger of the technology of today or the manufacturers is to give the feeling to the kids that there is no limits and no limitations, that you can do everything. When you can do everything, you do nothing. I mean, limits are very important. The advice I could give to a young artist would be: take one synth, take one plugin, and just stay with it for 6 months. Forget everything else, but try to develop your own identity through one instrument, whatever it is. And this is the same. I mean, going back to the next tour project, I really would like to think about the language of the festival. What is it to sharing the same box? I mean, you are given, we give you a tool, which is a box, which is a certain space. What can you do with it? And I'm really excited by exploring this on a visual point of view. So I'm going to start with festivals, then moving to a touring process, and maybe on the way to do some one-offs outdoor, probably.
This will be in 2016?
16 and 17,
right?
And, as one of my friends, being a British music critic in Europe, told me last week, said, you know, you just you don't know, but you just invented the concept of the never ending album. So, I mean, Bob Dylan did the never ending tour, but this is a kind of never, because what we didn't say that after this, I mean, this project grew up far more than my expectations, and I ended with so many different collaborators that I decided that this project would be a little bit like Kill Bill 1 and Kill Bill 2, with two albums, one album being released in October and one album in April 2016. There is no concept like night and day, before, after, or whatever. It's just the fact that it was so long.
You have so much music.
So much music that I had to divide it in two parts. And after, on the second album, you have lots of very exciting musicians and artists as well. So it's an exciting project I'm dying to share with an audience on stage next year.
So the album is called Electronica. And before we talk about the collaboration with Anthony Gonzalez, M83, I'm just going to run through a couple of the people here that you've got on the album. Boys Noise, Little Boots, F Buttons, because you're not allowed to say that word on the radio. Lang Lang, Pete Townsend, Vince Clarke, John Carpenter, Tangerine Dream, 3D from Massive Attack, Laurie Anderson as well. Some amazing artists on here. And as you said, there will be two releases. There are other people who we can't talk about just yet who are going to be on the next collection as well. Let's talk about M83 and Anthony Gonzalez. I remember the first time I met him when I was working somewhere else, probably 10, 12 years ago now. He was an up-and-coming electronic musician based out of San Francisco. And as you just were talking to me off microphone, he's more Californian than French at this point.
Yes.
What was so unique about that collaboration?
Actually, well, the first time I heard M83, I really was impressed by the fact that he was carrying this kind of modern Pink Floyd approach to sound. Also, the fact that he has such a great voice, but he's not approaching his voice either like a singer, but more like considering his voice like part of the orchestration, like one sound in the middle of other sounds. And you know, I probably very often describing Los Angeles as being a city being dark and sunny. And I think that M83 music is dark and sunny. There is this kind of very melodic part of his songs, because we both think that melody is one of the most important things in music. But also, behind this, there is a kind of much darker ambience with created by sounds, and he's a fantastic performer, and he has that kind of organic approach to create. I mean, really dark ambiences, but also there could be, you know, you have that in California. If you take, for instance, the Beach Boys, I mean, the Beach Boys could be like a bunch of happy songs, but behind that, it's hiding hell of a
so
sadness
dark.
And yeah. Darkness and underground melancholia and things like that. Yeah. And I think M83 has that.
So do you think this song is obviously a reflection of both of your styles, but from the point of view of the Los Angeles influence, do you feel it reflects that and it has that dark and sunny side?
Yes, yeah, in a sense, but also we are sharing this kind of schizophrenic approach of music between being dark and sunny. I've always been very interested in any kind of art form, by this kind of contradiction that, I mean, something that, I mean, conveys a kind of kind of happiness, but behind that, hiding a bit of or hell of a melancholia. I mean, it's strange because the first track I ever made when I was a student in this electronic music center in Paris was called "Happiness is a Sad Song." And I think that is exactly what interests me in music, and that could be the title of the album, in a sense. Because I think that Moby is carrying this, Pete Townsend is carrying that. I mean, John Carpenter is carrying that, Laurie Anderson, and M83, obviously. Moby Air also has that kind of schizophrenic approach to sound and to melodies.
So we're going to wrap up our conversation and preview some of the songs with the track from the collaboration with M83. What is the name of this song?
It's called Glory, and we had in mind this idea of doing a kind of stadium anthem, something really dynamic, like a kind of dance floor anthem in a sense, but also more kind of electronic music anthem. And this is called Glory, and where the voice, the vocal, more than in lots of songs from M83, more than ever, is really approached a synth solo or guitar solo. I mean, the voice for me is he actually processed his vocals on his own. Most of the time, when I did the final mix for other tracks, it was something that I did it on my own. But he, at the very early stage, he did, this is the voice, the vocal, and the vocal part was already with all reverb and everything, and didn't touch it. And that is very meaningful and says a lot about the way he approaches his vocal, like a guitar player would approach his sound. He has a specific approach to not only using his voice, but also processing it.
Let me ask you one final question before we hear this song. What did you learn most of all from this process of all these many and varied collaborations?
I've learned so many things. I've learned to also that how musicians can be isolated, and also when it comes to the creative process, it's a very intimate moment. It's like inviting somebody in his bedroom or bathroom, even if it doesn't sound that romanesque or romantic, but it's that because there is some pain in the creative process, and sharing this most of the time you want to hide that, and when you are working together on the same painful process, it creates an instant complicity, an instant intimacy.
Jean-Michel Jarre, been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
We're looking forward to the album.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.